It's Internet Safety Week on Wells Tech. Stay tuned for resources to keep you and your kids safe. We also have a wealth of listener feedback. All that and more coming up. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, episode 224 for February 22nd, 2012. Glad to have you all back. This is a show that discusses technology and ministry and where those two meet. And helping me chit-chat about those kinds of things, as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and welcome back to the USA.
Yes, buenos dias.
Exactly. Some tech chatting down on the beaches in Mexico. How was that?
That was wonderful. Not just the place, because we were really right on the beach, the Caribbean, way down, about 2 hours north of the Belize border. So we were kind of in a remote location. The home we were at had different kinds of technologies than I'm used to. It didn't have any electrical or water service, so they had to make their own electricity with solar panels and collected rain from the roof and put it in a big tank under the house itself. So we did have internet, although a little spotty. I think they use DirecTV kind of satellite internet. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit spotty to have a technology conference. But the best part about being down there was the people, and met with about 7 or 8 Mexican Lutheran national pastors. And Mike Hartman, who's a friend of the show, been on a few times, was my translator, and he just did an awesome job. And well, I'll have a lot of memories, made some new friends, and talk technology with the pastors down there. All very eager to use that, and some are doing some cool things already in their congregations. So,
a lot different than the way we do it here in the U.S., or
no,
are there a lot of similarities?
You know, using Facebook, websites. They were very interested in some of the video conferencing stuff we talked about, and screen sharing. Join.me was new. Some texting is big down there. So mm-hmm. a lot of strategies around text messaging to members and to youth groups and those kinds of things. So, you know, not a lot. My challenge was I didn't know if some of the things that I would normally recommend here in the States was available in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So we kind of explored a few of those options together. And if they were available, was there a Spanish version that they could read? Because most of them don't speak English, or at least speak it very well. And so it's very helpful for them to have something that caters to the Hispanic community.
So very interesting.
It was.
Well, thanks for being our ambassador to Mexico.
Hope to go back sometime. Yeah, absolutely. So it was a good time. But I'm back, and we're going to talk about internet safety today. And this kind of was an outgrowth of a presentation I did a number of weeks back up in Fond du Lac at Faith Lutheran School there. And those of you that are longtime listeners will probably recognize one of our faithful listeners, Ryan Rosenthal, is a teacher there. He invited me to come up there and to talk to his PTA, or whatever they call it up there, about internet safety. So I had got a chance to meet Ryan. I had never met him. I met his lovely wife, Darlene. And she shared with me something kind of interesting. She listens to apparently Ryan plays the podcast in the car.
And lucky lady.
Yeah. And she appreciates it too, because she's into some of these technology things. But she said, she kind of paid me a compliment. She said, "You have a very soothing voice. It puts my kids right to sleep."
So there I didn't you know go.
Quite how to take that. I've heard that from others as well. So that's a double-edged sword, I suppose. So hopefully, apparently, you're the one that keeps people awake, and I put them to sleep. So that's maybe a good combination.
Yeah, I saw a Valentine's card from NPR that said you have a face for radio or something like that, you know?
So yep, exactly.
That's me.
That's me, too.
All right.
All right. So we should talk internet safety. And what I thought we would do is maybe just hit a couple of the highlights from my presentation. And there are some awesome resources that I came across as a result of this presentation as well. So I think in general, the presentation was primarily for parents, but also there were a bunch of kids there. So I tried to talk about things that the kids and their parents could talk about together. And, you know, there's the normal stuff, being careful, having oversight over your kids, making sure you know what they're doing, how to use social networks appropriately, those kinds of things. But the theme was just being a good Christian citizen on the internet, so that there really shouldn't be a difference in how you approach being online as you do being offline. And some of the same biblical principles apply, whether you are online or off. So we talked about how you treat each other, and one of the big topics, and we're going to have an interview here in a few minutes, was about it, is cyberbullying. And a number of people there had experiences with that, and I think that's a growing problem. So how to both prevent it, but then also how to deal with it if you see it. We talked about texting and instant messaging and some of the very positive things that can come out of that, but also some of the challenges and how things get around if you're not careful with what you share. We talked about what I called a digital code of conduct. So when anybody is going online, there's just certain things that they should be aware of and also subscribe to as a Christian. Maybe the one that got the most interesting conversation was give everything the grandma test before posting. So if you post it and you knew your grandma was reading it, would you still post it?
Great, great illustration there. And I think, you know, something to cause us to pause a little bit and, you know, just who we are and that we're representing God online, that we are needing to represent His reputation, you know, as Christians, and not be someone different online than who we are in person.
And then we talked a little bit about just some common sense things of keeping your children safe online. I presented a internet safety contract, which is basically a promise between parent and child that certain standards would be upheld and for their own safety. One that you often hear is keep the computer in a public area of your home. That just makes sense to do, especially for the younger kids. Set limits on use, and that probably goes across the board for any kind of technology, whether it's game playing or being on the iPad or iPod Touch, whatever. Set limits that make sense. Another one was get familiar with the sites your children visit, so become involved in their internet surfing habits and what they do online. Know your children's passwords, if for no other reason that the child then knows that at any given time you can log in and kind of see what they're up to. And then we spent a lot of time looking at different security software that is available, and it has really come a long way. Security software has been around for a long time, probably 15 years. We could go back and find software that you could install on a computer that would set limits or block sites or track activity, those kinds of things. But it's very sophisticated now, and the prices are actually very reasonable for some of these products that will allow not just limits and tracking, but will constantly be listening for, quote-unquote, listening for different phrases or things that they would type in or that a child might type into a Facebook page or a chat window that might not be as wise as somebody would think, like terms like my password is or my address is or my phone number is or my email address is. Those kinds of things can automatically be logged and then parent notified. So some very cool technologies emerging.
I really appreciate the PowerPoint, and we'll be sharing that PowerPoint with our listeners. So check out our show notes page if you want to go through the PowerPoint that Martin used. One thing that you included at the end of the PowerPoint was a couple of pages of these resources, mm-hmm. including the filtering softwares and things. But one I hadn't heard of was a site called connectsafely.org,
right.
with a ton of resources out there about internet safety. One in particular that I honed in on was a parent's guide to Facebook. And this is quite an impressive document that they've shared. It's not short. There's a lot to Facebook and a lot of different facets of security and settings that this really details and makes you aware of. So looks like a great book. I see they have a brand new one out called A Parent's Guide to Google Plus. So they're covering all social media.
Cool.
Streams on this Connect Safely website. So I think this is one that I'll be recommending to our parents at St. John's.
Yep. This is Ann Collier and Larry Magid. Larry Magid has been around for a long time. He has been he was one of the first podcasters, mm-hmm. and it's great to see him involved with this. He's a guy that kind of gets the internet, and this is a looks like they're keeping these presentations up to date, too. So, for instance, the Facebook guide looks like it was updated February 18th of this year even, so which is probably a necessity given mm-hmm. that how security or privacy settings can change at the drop of a hat with Facebook. So it's important to kind of stay up with these things. But, yeah, this is very exhaustive.
Yeah, I noticed they have the whole timeline thing in there, which
right.
is new and just being rolled out on all the different Facebook profiles. So they get in great detail about the timeline and the different sections of the Facebook timeline, that kind of thing.
Yep. One thing I'm noticing here in the Facebook document that you referred to is question, why children should be honest about their age? Mm-hmm. And I think we see that across even our churches and looking at our schools. And if you kind of poll the kids in the elementary school, whether they have Facebook accounts, you'll probably find a number of them that are not 13, you know, that have a Facebook account. But there's a reason that those limits exist. So that's something that parents should pay attention to. Because there's really nothing to stop you from lying about your age on these sites. So there's all kinds of things related to COPPA and other things that should be a concern to parents. And just making sure you know what your children are doing online.
Sure. I think those guidelines are there for a reason. I just read a stat. I'm not sure where I read it, but 7.5 million children under the age of 13 were on Facebook in 2011.
I wouldn't doubt that for a second.
Sure.
Then I put together that another set of resources that are kind of safety related. One at the top of the list, which we've mentioned on the show, I think, a number of times, is OpenDNS. OpenDNS is a free product that allows you to change how your computer translates the IP addresses into actual logical names or vice versa. And then it can filter sites in the process. So they use traditional filter databases that you can say, well, I don't want to don't show me any gambling sites or obviously pornographic sites or hate speech or those kinds of things can be blocked right at the router so that they never even appear on the computer. So, you know, schools obviously could use this, but homes as well. And again, the free version works really well. You can pay a little bit more and get a little bit more control, but at the end of the day, you need to use something like this. And then I talked about a couple other things that we've talked about before, way back, probably in the first year of the show. We talked with Paul Mavergeorge about Covenant Eyes, which is they do have a filtering product now, but it's more an accountability software where you make an agreement. You and your partner say, you're going to get a log of all the websites that I visit, and I'm going to get your log as well, and that way they keep each other accountable. So software that can be installed both on the computer and then also on mobile phones, which is and iPads, those kinds of things, are something that need coverage as well.
Lots of great resources out there, and that's probably a good time to lead into our great resources that our interviewee shared
yep.
with us, Martin.
Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, we talked with Dr. Justin Patchen. He's the co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center and an associate professor at UW-Eau Claire. And Justin was nice enough to join us and tell us quite a bit about his amazing research into cyberbullying. He's really dedicated a lot of his life to this topic, and he has some great resources to share with us.
So let's listen to our interview with Justin. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, we are very pleased to welcome Justin Patchen, Associate Professor at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and Co-Director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. Welcome, Justin. Thanks for joining us.
I'm very glad to be with you. Thanks.
Very much an honor to speak with you and have you join us on our Internet Safety Show. Maybe just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself to get us going.
Sure. Well, I teach at UW-Eau Claire. I've been here for 8 years teaching courses in criminal justice and criminology. Prior to arriving in Eau Claire, I was at Michigan State University for 5 years doing my graduate work and teaching classes, and I grew up in northern Minnesota. And for about the last 10 years, I've been studying what teens are doing online, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
What do you do for fun? What other than devoting your life to these important topics, how do you relax?
Well, yeah, there's not a lot of fun time in my life, but I do have a two-year-old son, and my wife and I and him like to be outside as much as possible. You know, we have a couple of dogs. We love taking them for walks and just spending a lot of time outside, which is a good change from the majority of my time, which is spent in front of a computer monitor.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you teach any classes on this particular topic at Eau Claire, or is it all criminal justice kind of stuff?
I pull some of my research into my classes, but very little. In fact, I'm in the process of developing a course that I can teach on these topics. The problem is there's such a demand for our traditional criminal justice courses here that there's not a lot of room for adding sort of different content. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to do that in the near future.
How did you get interested or started in this area of cyberbullying?
Well, I've always been interested in sort of traditional school violence and bullying and the school shootings that were happening in the late 90s. And in graduate school, I met up with a guy, Samir Hinduja, who was interested in computer crime and high-tech crime and identity theft and those kinds of things. And we just started talking about the ways teens were using technology to cause harm to one another. And this was in, 99, 2000, and nobody else was really exploring those issues back then. So we started doing it, and we've been researching it ever since.
Very good. And you have an awesome website. We found your website, cyberbullying.us, and wanted to hear a little bit about what went into building that website, who the intended audience is, and what they're going to find there when they visit the site.
Yeah, thanks. We put a lot of time into that site, Samir and I do. We set that up initially, I think back in 2005, because we were doing all this great research and learning a lot about what problems teens were encountering online. But, as academics, a lot of our work ends up in journals or books, and they end up on shelves places where people can't access them. And so we're getting a lot of phone calls from the media and parents and others who were interested in what we were doing. And so we decided we needed to create a forum for that information. So we set up a site as a way to disseminate all that we were learning. And so any time we do any research or write a journal article or have new books, we put all the information out there, and we try to do so in an accessible way. We have a blog that we try to update at least on a weekly basis, with new websites that are emerging, new laws, new promising approaches to teach internet safety and the responsible use of technology. So it's definitely designed for anybody who has children or who works with kids to better educate themselves about what's going on, but then also be able to pass that important information on to the youth.
I suppose with the advent of social networks, their popularity, this is a moving target. There are different ways to misuse it. Obviously, kids are very creative, inventive. How do you keep up with it? How do you continue to stay on top of the topic?
It's a challenge. Thankfully, at this point, we're so plugged into to the folks who are studying these kinds of things, and we have networks across the country and the world, in fact, where if there's a new technology that's emerging, our new website, we usually hear about it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll explore it. We'll learn a little bit more about it. And we don't focus so much on, you know, the websites in particular as much as we do the behaviors and try to teach, you know, teens to be responsible and have integrity no matter where they are, no matter what site they're using. Because you're exactly right. The sites do change. And if we focus all of our attention on Facebook, for example, we're going to, you know, miss the hundreds, if not thousands, of other environments that, that teens are exploring and perhaps misusing.
How big a problem is this, Justin? You know, can you quantify that at all? And is it worse now than it used to be, let's say, when we were in school, when we didn't have the ability to do any cyber bullying?
Right. Well, cyber bullying, in our research, we, you know, again, we've done studies, at least pilot studies, back to 2001, 2002, and across all the work that we've done, on average, anywhere from 20 to 25% of the students, usually middle school and high school students that we've surveyed, 20 to 25% have said they've been cyberbullied. And we,
wow,
you know, define it as deliberate behavior, as repeated behavior. We have nine different types of cyberbullying that we use to come up with a composite measure of what's going on. So anywhere from 20 to 25%. And we've also reviewed all the research that's been done by others across the United States and abroad. And as of, you know, earlier last year, there were about 30 published articles, and on average about 24% of students from those surveys had been cyberbullied. So we can say 1 in 4, 1 in 5 has been cyberbullied at some point in their lifetime. When we ask about the behaviors of the last 30 days, it's usually about 10% have experienced it in the last 30 days. And
wow,
it's difficult to say that it's getting worse. You know, most of the research I see shows a relatively stable trend at about those prevalence rates. We are hearing about more examples of cyberbullying, so I think that that teens are coming forward more often, which is a good thing. It's still not enough. When we first started studying this, only about 15% of victims of cyberbullying would tell an adult about their experience. Now it's maybe 25%, 30% at most. So there's still a lot that we maybe don't know. And the other good news is that bullying in general has been decreasing pretty significantly over the last 10 or 15 years. So
really,
there's hope. Although, that said, there's still more bullying happening at school than what's happening online, which surprises some people. So it's one of those things that we have to take seriously. It took us, you know, many generations before we realized that sort of regular bullying was a problem worth solving. So we can't take that approach as it when it comes to cyberbullying. Otherwise,
yeah,
way out of control before we know it.
Just kind of a related question then. Do you feel that educators and parents are with you on this, that they recognize this as a problem, or is there some kind of – is there denial to a certain degree that this actually happens?
Most parents and educators do realize this is a problem.
Good.
And that's why they're seeking us out. There are certainly those out there that believe it's not that big of a deal, and, you know, bullying is a rite of passage because they had to experience it. Everybody has to experience it. It's just something you deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I agree to some extent that a bit of conflict is, well, conflict is normal in adolescence, and you got to sort through those things. But bullying is categorically different when it's sort of one-sided and repetitive and creates challenges in the social and educational worlds of these kids. So most recognize it as a problem, but still many are looking for solutions in terms of how they respond, how they prevent.
Right.
And this is a particular challenge for educators who find themselves you know, ill-equipped to deal with what's going on away from the classroom, but yet what's going on Facebook or these other social media sites certainly does affect what's going on at school.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of educators, pastors, and parents in our Wells Tech listening audience. And you mentioned two different components of this, being proactive, being involved in the educational process to prevent the actual cyberbullying, and also supporting those that have been bullied. So what kind of advice do you have for those in those trusted positions with kids that may be needing to learn about this?
Sure, yeah. There's no, you know, one magic solution to all of this. I think from a response standpoint, it's very important to take all forms of bullying or harassment or mistreatment seriously. And by seriously, I'm not necessarily suggesting, you know, formal discipline, you know, suspensions, expulsions, those kinds of things. I mean, that might be appropriate in rare cases, rare serious cases, but I find that many times the person, the student doing the bullying or cyberbullying, especially in cyberbullying cases, doesn't quite understand completely the harm that they're creating and the problem that they're causing, especially with technology, as I mentioned, because oftentimes they don't, the cyber bully doesn't see the target, doesn't mm-hmm. really understand the reaction and that they're really upset. Simply sitting that student down and saying, look, this is harassment, this is wrong, this is a violation of our school policy, it's also, you know, just not treating the other person with respect, and so it's got to stop. And, you know, some early research suggests that would be very useful, especially if dealt with before it, you know, explodes out of control. And so recognizing this as a problem, sending a common message to students that all of these forms of harassment, no matter where it's occurring, are going to be dealt with. From a prevention standpoint, a lot of our work in the last couple of years has been focusing on creating a positive culture and climate at school. And we know that having a good climate at school leads to better academic performance among students, better connectedness, fewer problem behaviors overall. But what we're also finding in our research is that you'll also see schools that have a good climate will also see fewer problems with their students online, fewer cyberbullying incidents, sexting incidents, other misuses of technology. Because, you know, if I really care about my school and my teachers, I'm going to think twice before posting that appropriate comment or picture or whatever it is online. And we've got a new book coming out in a couple of months, School Climate 2.0, basically making the argument that if you create this environment where everybody's respected, the students have a say in sort of what's going on at the school, they're really connected, they have school spirit, the faculty and the staff know them by name, and it just creates this environment where they're not going to want to disappoint not only their, you know, their teacher or the principal or counselor, but even their fellow students by engaging in some of these inappropriate behaviors.
Sure. Now, I think we would agree that parents are really very pivotal and key to overcoming some of these issues related to cyberbullying. How can the school, the administration there, the educator, the teacher, the principal, assist parents in kind of proactively dealing with cyberbullying, both recognizing it and then ultimately managing it? Are there things that they should be thinking about, programs, conversations? How would you suggest they educate the parents and bring them along?
Definitely. Everybody needs to be on the same page on this. A lot of times, you know, parents want to put the responsibility on schools. Schools want to put the responsibility on parents. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to be on the same page. And so I think they should work together along with other community, you know, leaders, faith groups, law enforcement, mm-hmm. other adolescent-oriented organizations in the community. But I think oftentimes educators have a little bit of an advantage because, you know, they have networks of colleagues, again, around the country who know of some of the pressing issues. And so they know of things mm-hmm. oftentimes before the parents learn about them in terms of new websites or potential problems or issues. And oftentimes, you know, the teacher, especially in lower schools, elementary, may see a child for more waking hours of the day than some parents. And so they can key in on any potential problems or disruptions or relationships that are occurring that parents can then you know, work to solve and give their kids some skills to deal with some of these problems. So everybody needs to be on the same page. And so educators can provide a forum for parents, you know, maybe educate them about the latest technology and some of the problems they're seeing, talk with parents about school policies related to inappropriate behavior. You know, schools do have the authority, public and private schools, to discipline students for behavior that occurs away from school if that behavior disrupts the learning environment at school. Mm, and so oftentimes parents don't realize that, and students don't realize it either. So everybody needs to be on the same page about what the policies are and what the potential consequences of online misconduct might be. So I think, again, I stress this sort of education that everybody sort of understands the problem and develops a working program, whether it's prevention or response together.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I understand that you have a book out called Bullying Beyond the Schoolyard, Preventing and Responding to Cyberbullying. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was our first book. We published that back in 2008. It was you know, sort of an overview of the problem of cyberbullying and our early research. And, you know, we do talk about the laws and prevention and response and We published another book last year, Cyberbullying Prevention and Response, Expert Perspectives, where we took several of the experts from across the country and had them contribute chapters on their particular area of expertise, whether it's counseling or law enforcement or educators and different things. And as I mentioned, we got another one coming out in a couple of months. So we've definitely been busy because we're learning so much. And we want to, again, get that information out into the hands of those that can benefit from it. And, you know, information about our books and, you know, our presentations, workshops, all the stuff we do is on the website at cyberbullying.us.
Very good. Justin, you've been so gracious with your time on this very important topic. Really appreciate you doing that. And we'll be watching your work. And, you know, I've bookmarked your site, and we'll revisit that as I go around and make my internet safety presentations as well. This is something that needs greater awareness, I think, and there's some good remedies to this as well. It's not a hopeless situation.
That's exactly right. I appreciate the opportunity to share my message with you.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks.
Our thanks to Dr. Justin Patchen for taking some time with us. He is a prolific writer, Sally. He's got a number of books out, and if you go to their website, the material there is very up-to-date and added to on a regular basis.
Yeah, they have a great resources section geared toward teens as well as adults. So if you're looking for some things to share with people on the topic, I think you'll find lots of great handouts and things that you can get from the cyberbullying.us website. So be sure and check it out. We'll include some links in our show notes as well.
Very good. And thanks again, Justin. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah, we are visiting a site today put together by our friends at InternetEvangelismDay.com. Mm-hmm. And this is a blog article that came out recently talking about the use of Pinterest. Our listeners will remember that we talked about Pinterest within the last few weeks. We actually set up a Wells Tech Pinterest board and have shared that out there for people to collaborate on. And this particular article is a great overview about Pinterest. So if you're just getting started or trying to figure out exactly what Pinterest is, this is a really good article to get you oriented to the site and up and running if you want to give it a try yourself. But that's just the first part of the article. Once you get past the how-to information, they dig into how to share the good news appropriately using Pinterest. And so there's a lot of good ways that you could make use of this from a congregational standpoint or from an outreach standpoint. Mm-hmm. And it's probably a little bit different strategy than maybe you're used to. It's not all about self-promotion on Pinterest, but it's about sharing not just your resources, but any resources that are good in a particular area. And I think they do a very good job in this article of explaining that and giving you ideas for a church strategy toward having a Pinterest mm-hmm. account. Maybe, you know, you do things that are interesting to those people in your local area, or you know, hobbies or family issues or things like that, where you can pull together resources that would be of interest to people following you, and also introduce, obviously, gospel outreach in the mix as well. So check it out. We'd love to hear from you. If you are using Pinterest for your congregation, please send us a link to your Pinterest boards. And also, if you want to collaborate on the Wells Tech board, we're still looking for more collaborators. We have a few that have joined the ranks and have privileges to add things to our Wells Tech Pinterest board. But if you're on Pinterest and would like to be part of that, just follow Wells Tech and we'll get you added.
Yeah, you're going to have to help me along with Pinterest, Sally. I think this is something that I've not quite got the hang of, and I'm still trying to figure out its best use. I know there are uses, and I've seen some awesome examples. In fact, in my preparation for the presentation to the Mexican Lutheran National Pastors this past week, I had a whole section on Pinterest, although I felt kind of like a hypocrite, because I was recommending, you know, different techniques and approaches, and showed them a number of different examples of how churches are using it, but I'm still in a wait and see. This is something that I'm still trying to figure out. You know, is this thing going to take off in ministry? And the more I read, the more I'm becoming convinced. But since maybe my problem is I'm not a huge user, so I'm having trouble connecting the dots.
Yeah, I think it's a girl thing.
Yeah, so that's my excuse.
Although we did get a new guy in our Wells Tech group, but it's definitely dominated by women for the first time. A Wells Tech group dominated by women. We have more women on our Wells Tech board than men. Okay. So it just seems like it's more a lot more visual and a lot more image-oriented, and
right.
that women seem to be more attracted to that kind of thing, which is, you know, not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
Technology to outreach to women specifically.
Sure.
So maybe that's where the niche is.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm going to leave that stuff to you.
Right. Okay.
You're our Pinterest evangelist.
There you go.
Okay. Let's move on to picks of the week.
Sure. This week I have one of my favorite websites that I use for training people on the web, and it's called Welcome to the Web. And it's probably geared to about 7 to 11-year-old students. I've used it with third grade and up. There is a good bit of reading, although there's some integrated voice, so they'll read it to you in a lot of spots on the site as well. So you could use it with non-readers potentially. Not the glitziest website in the world, but the content is just right on the mark for introducing people to the web. And I think this ties in well, Martin, with our safety conversation, because I think a lot of times we kind of assume that the kids just get it. And I think maybe sometimes they're just kind of faking their way through, and that might lead them to making some mistakes on the internet that could be avoided if they were more savvy about the technology they're making use of. So
right.
it's very basic. I've pointed adults to it as well. So even though it's usable for children, there's plenty here for people to learn. If they're just novices at the internet, this is a great starting point. They have chapters on getting started online, staying safe, using your browser, searching online, top tricks, and then they have a challenge at the end. And it's easy to navigate. They build in little pin codes, so no matter where you stop on the site, you can write down basically the page number and jump directly to that particular page and restart the process. And they give you little rewards. It's kind of like a sleuthing of activity where you're getting clues along the way, and there's a big challenge at the end where you use all your internet skills to solve a problem. So there's some fun built into it, but the information that they share is just right on target. I mean, things like if you hover your mouse over images and the mouse changes to a little finger, that means you can click on it and it'll take you somewhere. And search tips, printing tips, just really basic information about interacting with the browser, things like copy and paste. All those kind of things are covered in this little short course. And they do have worksheets that you can print out and do some research of your own and come up with answers and things to record on the worksheets. So like I said, I've used it in the computer lab setting to help guide the kids along. Then I give them the worksheets to actually have some work to do along the way and practice the skills that they're learning. And I think it's very well done. I think that it's worth a look for teachers or for parents.
I was going to say, this is something I could send to my mom. This is kind of 101 kind of stuff where you need to know this stuff to operate effectively and safely on the internet.
And I think there's a lot of people that don't, and they make kind of dumb mistakes because they don't know these basic skills.
Just when to single click, when to double click, you know, what the right click can do. I mean, all those things are just foundational computing skills that'll really confound you if you're not understanding what
just
the options are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had a lot of people watch me, you know, and I'll do a right click or a keyboard combination of keys or something. And they're like, what'd you just do? How'd you do that? You know, and this covers all those basic kind of interactions with your browser. And so I think it's well done. And I think a lot of people would benefit from just taking the challenge and going through the Welcome to the Web website. So give it a try.
Very good. Okay. My pick is a website as well called namevine.com. That's namevine.com. It's a one-use website. There's no links. It's one page. And all it is trying to do is provide a one-stop shop for finding a domain name. But it's a little bit more than that. It does a little bit more than just say, well, this domain name's available. It will compare whatever you type in and see if it's available, not just in .com, .net, .org, .me, .us versions, but it also throws in Facebook and Twitter. So in one location, you can type in a domain and see if you can get both a Facebook ID and a Twitter ID and what domains are available for that particular request that you have. So if you're looking for to start up a website, maybe it's not even your church website, maybe it's a website that you're using for a specific project or a program, or it could be the name of an organization, whatever it is, this is going to be a quick and easy way for you to find out whether it's available and then also be able to use Facebook and Twitter at the same time with the same name. And it's just good practice to try and find a name that's consistent across all those platforms as people are looking for you, not just on the internet for a web page, but also maybe looking on Twitter and looking on Facebook for that same name. So that's namevine.com. Very simple, but very effective.
Very good. I actually have a group I'm working with currently. We're trying to come up with a domain name. That is a challenging task.
It is.
And then you throw in the fact that you're not just trying to look for a domain name, but a Facebook name and a Twitter name. Mm-hmm. So this is nice to have a one-stop shop.
It is. And works very quickly and very straightforward. Anybody could really use it.
Very good.
Let's move on. Actually, a reminder, Sally, of our 7 best.
Just 2 weeks away, we're going to be doing our second 7 Best show on teacher resource sites. This is coming up on March 7th, and we need your input to make this the best show that we can. We're trying to build a list of great sites that teachers can make use of, not just specific subject area sites, although certainly they can make the list if that's a great site, but just a kind of a clearinghouse type sites where teachers can go and find specific things on a platform or a topic or subject specific or whatever it may be. We're open to it all, and we'd love to hear from you to help us build our list.
And if you don't share, then Sally and I just could come up with the list. So
who knows what would come?
That's right. Don't leave it to us.
So talk to us. Talk to us on Facebook or Twitter or Google+, or send us a comment via our show notes webpage at wellstech.wells.net. Any of those communication channels will do. You can even leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear your voice.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to community feedback. And we've got a ton of it this week, Sally, because we recorded early because of my trip to Mexico. And we've got 7 or 8 pieces of feedback. So where do we start?
Oh, I think that we will start by talking about Tom Rosenau's comment that he sent in a couple of things, a cool link to a color wizard color scheme generator. So if you're doing maybe some web work or design work for a media campaign, mm-hmm. You might want to make use of this color scheme generator link. And then also a note about his rooted nook. So apparently he did some jailbreaking on his, he called it a Nook Simple Touch. And what was cool about it is that now he can use the Android Logos app. And he says he doesn't have to rebuy all his Logos books, and they show up on his e-ink screen. So easy to read. So
cool.
Nice pick there.
Okay. I'm ready with a voicemail, by the way. We did get a voicemail. Do you want to do that one next?
That would be great.
We got a voicemail from our semi-regular classroom technology, one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents, Gail Potratz, from New London. So let me cue this up.
Good morning, everybody. This is Gail Potratz calling. I have something I'd like to share with you today. And I tried to use the new Pinterest, but since I didn't have an appropriate image, that didn't work. And I'm going to take more than 140 characters for sure. Mm-hmm. So I'm using the old-fashioned voicemail today. I could not wait to tell you about my newest resource, and that is called Cleaner, CLEANR. And if you search for that in your browser, you'll be taken to a page which will tell you that this browser extension for Safari, Chrome, and Firefox will install very easily and clean up your YouTube interface. I've talked about and used for years the extension called Quiet Time to do the same thing. The advantage of Cleaner is when you look at YouTube, you see only the videos that you want to see and you want the kids to see. Removes everything else, cleans it up nicely. And if you set this in your browser on your machine and the kids' machines, when you clone an image, this would always be there. You don't have to turn it on like you always do with QuietTube. So if you want a cleaner YouTube and not worry about showing kids something you may not want them to see, CLEANR is the extension for you.
Thank you, Gail. Have you had you heard of this before, Sally?
No, I haven't used that particular one, but going to give it a try, especially if I can install it in their browsers and we know it's taken care of. We're trying to get rid of all those comments and all that extra videos
recommended
that show on the side
videos
that you don't
or
have
lists.
Any control over.
Yep, exactly. A cleaner YouTube cannot be a bad thing. So
yeah, for sure.
Okay.
We will move on then with a comment from Ryan Rosenthal at Faith in Fond du Lac. He sent us a link to an interesting article. The title is Using Technology in the Classroom Requires Experience and Guidance. And so might want to give this a read, but what they're basically finding is that new teachers are not using technology as effectively as the seasoned veterans of the classroom who know how to work it into their lesson plans and things. You know, usually we're looking to the younger people to kind of lead the way or expecting them to be the tech gurus. But what they're saying is it's not all about just the bells and whistles, but it's more about integrating it into your lessons properly, using it at the right time and not using it at the right time, and that the more experienced teachers are better at doing that. So
yeah. I would think part of that would be younger teachers are just trying to keep their heads above water. I mean, they haven't built true curriculums yet, and they're still, you know, learning things as they go, and the more experienced teacher has a little bit of that behind them and can focus on some of these techniques and try a few things without fear that, you know, they're not even going to be prepared, you know, for class. So that was a great article.
Absolutely. Pastor Rob Gunther from Grace in Kenai, Alaska, wrote and shared a link to gospelbooks.net. He says, obviously, I can't endorse the theology in most of these books, but subscribing to this site via email has given me some great reads for cheap or even free. Thought you might like to pass it all along. Yep. And so thanks, Pastor Gunther, and nice to hear from you. He's a longtime listener. I remember hearing from him from way back, so it's great that he's still a Wells Techer.
Great.
Good stuff. There was an interesting discussion over on LinkedIn. If you aren't on a member of the In the Wells group on LinkedIn, you might be missing out on some techie type discussions. In particular, there was a question thrown out. Someone was looking for a good way to organize their prospect information, and lots of great ideas were shared, including various software solutions, as well as just using Google spreadsheets and shared privatized Google Forms and things like that. So if you want to be part of that, then you can hop on over to the In the Wells group on LinkedIn, and we'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Yeah, there are, if you're not aware of that group, that is actually pretty popular and growing. I probably approve at least a request or two a day, you know, to join that group. And LinkedIn is probably more for professionals looking to network than anything else. I think that's its sweet spot. But we have over 700 Wells members. I would assume most of them are Wells members. I don't validate that. I usually just accept the requests. And they talk about all kinds of interesting things, and this is an example.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a job search, this would be a great place to start as well, or looking for employees.
Sure. Another social avenue that we have available to us is our Facebook page at facebook.com/WellsTech. Did you say face what?
Face what?
Yeah.
Facebook's only a little further ahead than Pinterest for me. So
okay. I think you're a Google Plus guy, huh?
I'm enjoying it. I really am.
All right. Anyway, on Facebook, a couple of comments, one from Ryan Rosenthal. And this was interesting. And again, a little bit different take. Ryan tried out Khan Academy. We've talked about Khan Academy a couple times on the show recently, a place to watch a large collection of videos. And they also have the ability to sign up for accounts and have students drill on different topics. He says, when I checked out Khan Academy to use in the classroom, I felt it might be good for a student to go and review on their own, but not to teach a new concept in the classroom. I thought his delivery could be improved. His explanations and examples were okay, but not able to be as specifically relevant as a teacher who knows his or her students would be. It's certainly useful in some settings, but not the panacea I had heard it to be. So great feedback, Ryan. And I think everybody's going to use it in different ways. And you're certainly not going to have that face-to-face interaction that you would as a teacher, obviously. So right. Very good. And then Mark Parsons put a link on our Wells Tech page to their church's Journey to the Cross efforts, which is a neat way to do it. They set up a themed Facebook page around a sermon series, basically, that they're working on. So not just specific to a congregation Facebook page, but promoting more of a theme for their Lenten series. And I thought it was very well done. So if you want to check that out, we'll have that link in the show notes as well.
Great.
And then finally, we've made it to our DIGO links. DIGO is a very active group for Wells Tech, and you can be part of that. We have 26 members currently that contribute links as they're surfing the web. They're able to tag them for the Wells Tech audience. And certainly, you could be a part of that if you want to visit our DIGO page. And you might want to visit it today because we have a lot of links. We're not able to mention them all on the show. Examples include Google Web Fonts, which is a site dedicated to fonts that will work on a website. It teaches you how to install them on your website if you want, and then you can download them and make use of them for free from Google. So check that out. A link to O'Reilly Media training resources on Google Apps. And these are free, high-quality training resources done by the technical experts at O'Reilly, all about Google Apps. And we've talked about Google Apps being a great solution potentially for some of our schools and churches to use for private intranet-type workings. So check out that training if you're looking for help with Google Apps. And then finally, Martin, you shared a link to 9 hot tips for small business marketing on Facebook.
Yeah, this is a blog post on Mashable. And while it says small business, I think this applies to churches and schools as well. Just really solid tips. The first one, interestingly enough, is use Namevine, which was my pick of the week, to find a good URL. But then they talk about using third-party platforms to distribute social content like Hootsuite or those kinds of things, which allow you to schedule tweets or posts, application platforms of how to get your church or school on or business on mobile platforms, social plugins, find out when and what to post on Facebook, how to use Facebook Insights, so that's more intelligence about how people are using your site, talking about local content, creating a QR code for your Facebook fan page, talks about Facebook ads, and just some good quality information. It's not real deep, but it gives you just an idea of things that you can do to get started using Facebook for your church or school.
So between that and our parents' guide to Facebook, we got Facebook pretty covered today.
We do.
Good
We're
stuff.
All over it, yes.
All right.
Is that all for our community feedback?
I think we'll give it a rest there. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
We had played a voicemail from Gail Potratz a little bit earlier in the feedback section of our show, but Gail will be joining us in person for our next show as we have our education show, and we'll be talking with her about the future of textbooks, for at least from our vantage point. This has kind of come about with things that Apple has been putting out and the whole e-reader concept and Chromebooks and Khan Academy and those kinds of things. Where is this all headed? What should our schools be thinking about related to electronic textbooks and their place in, let's say, maybe the average Wells Elementary School?
So, looking forward to a great discussion. Gail always has lots to contribute.
Absolutely. And lots of relevant experience, too. So we're not just it's not just me chatting about the classroom, which I've really only spent much time in the student seat rather than the teacher's seat. So, so tune in next week for that. Let's close the show, Sally, with the music of Branches Band. Let's listen to a Lenten piece called Nothing But the Blood. We'll talk to you all next week. Thanks for joining. Bye-bye.
But the blood of Jesus. What can make me whole again? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. How precious is the flow that makes me white as snow. No other fount I know. Nothing but the blood of Jesus. But the blood of Jesus.
Not the good that I have done.
Nothing but the blood of Jesus.
How precious is the flow
that makes me white as snow.
No other fount I know.
Nothing but the blood of Jesus.
This is all my hope and peace,
nothing but the blood of Jesus.
This is all my righteousness,
nothing but the blood of Jesus.
How precious is the flow
that makes me white as snow.
No other fount I know,
nothing but the blood of Jesus. Nothing but the blood of Jesus.